You are listening to the Crypto Hustle with Eleanor Blanc. Only on the CoinSpice.io podcast network.
All right, so we are back with the Crypto Hustle with Eleanor Blanc. This will be the fourth episode, and it seems like every time we talk, there is some major event going on.
Every time we talk, the world is just dimmer and dimmer.
We usually with the guests, especially if you have a frequent, sort of series as we do, it gets more difficult as time goes on to find subjects and things to talk about. That has not been the case with you. But in any case, it's so great, Eleanor, to have you back. And thanks so much for coming.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just thinking, like, you're just, this intro is just so sad. This sort of like, but either the abundance of topics or the fact that we never run out of subjects. I mean, the last one was regarding the infrastructure funding proposal, and now this seems like ages away. There's so many other things. Yeah, I think we've gained so much perspective. I hope so. But yeah. We have other things to discuss for sure now.
I told you I didn't want to talk about it anymore. Careful what you ask for.
this is the big, big paradigm shift that we were asking for or not, you know, in crypto.
Right. Right. And that actually is kind of where I wanted to take the conversation, because I think your life, so let's say we'd never met and I meet you in 30 years, okay, and we're talking and we're BSing, and I say, I will automatically know one thing about you is that your life has a nice and tidy dividing point between March 2020 before and March 2020 after. This changes everything. And I'm not trying to be melodramatic. I'm not trying to sell podcasts. I'm just
exactly
calls it as I sees it. This is the time for crypto, right? I mean, if this is what I've been hearing since we started for the last decade, we need a financial collapse. We need a lack of faith in the fiat legacy financial systems. Governments need to be exposed as just, you know, pushing on a string. If you thought 2008 gave birth to Bitcoin, 2008 was nothing compared to this. So go with that a little bit. What are your thoughts? What are your sort of your first impressions? Because I you're a thinky thoughter person, and
thinky thoughter. I'll take that.
Yeah,
I'll take that. No, I think as you just sort of recapped, this is definitely part of our story as crypto enthusiasts, is to say, okay, crypto is here because it's a better alternative. We have a better system with blockchain, with cryptocurrencies. We can achieve, you know, so many different things and decentralized trust and offer, you know, a better alternative monetary system, or at least that's what we've been selling. That's what we've been telling people.
Yep.
That's what we've been researching and developing and working hard on, and, you know, pulling our hair and smiling about. And I kind of thought, as someone who's on the ground, who's been working for different cryptocurrency companies, trying to explain cryptocurrencies to the masses, trying to explain people what private keys are, where to get a wallet, you know, do their first transaction. This is definitely part of our pitch, right? The day the traditional financial world collapses, or, you know, there's a serious recession or a depression or whatever, you want to make sure that your capital is fluid, or, you know, that you can trade and transact freely. And you want to make sure that not all your assets are in the same basket, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And for people to change their minds and for societies to shift, you usually need a horrible cataclysmic moment where people are all like, oh my God, and then they change. You can tell them over and over before that. Usually shit has to hit the fan pretty hard for people to change habits, especially when it relates to money and finances. This is always like a kind of a sticky, icky subject for a lot of people. I think we don't talk about personal finances enough,
right,
just in the out, you know, in the just in the general discussion out there. So when we talk about crypto, there's already so many levels of, you know, of so many storytelling right there. You know, it's, is it the angle of like, is it the freedom angle? Is it the, I don't know, the censorship resistance, you know, international remittance, payments, more than that, DeFi, wherever you go, the field is like so vague and beautiful and being creative for the world of tomorrow. But to change people's opinion and for people to actually change their habits and for people to actually use a different product and change their life, basically regarding their finances, you need a shock. And I never wanted it. You know, it's not something that you wish for. It's just something that you understand as a, I don't know, general podcast commentator that people need to be shocked for them to change. And this might be the shock, but at the same time, we're not seeing. Is this the big mass adoption wave? I'm not sure. I wish we had more time, and then others would say that this was already coming for the last 5 years, 10 years. So definitely we're in it right now. This month is like such a turning point for crypto, but for the world, for supply chains, to, you know, stock markets, to the healthcare system, to the rise of authoritarian powers in these times of in these pandemic times, basically. We're seeing all of this all at the same time happening. So it's like, it's a lot to take in. And I don't think we know or have their perspective yet to know the outcome. We can just like guess, but this is definitely a turning point. That's for sure.
No, you're a cosmopolitan gal. You've traveled the world. You speak a few languages. You're tech savvy. I mean, be honest. Did you ever, in your wildest dreams, could you ever conceive of an entire continent, 1.3 billion people being told to stay inside? And I'm speaking of India now. Could that ever even remotely cross your mind?
No. I never, even though actually healthcare policies were actually one of my favorite subjects, I never thought of the pandemic angle. I, of course, researched it, read about it, saw movies, and thought, oh, you know, why not? And I know that is something that is, you know, it's an extreme situation which we can fantasize a lot about, you know, like, oh my God, the plague, oh my God, the Spanish plague, or the Spanish flu. And it's like, you look at our history and you think, whoa, 2/3 of Europe was wiped out, you know? Right. So I think there's a lot of, the narrative around pandemics is extremely scary, and it's part of the unknown. It's that part where your brain is like, well, if that happens, I can't control anything. And that's where the fear locks in, is that suddenly in the face of a pandemic, we're either turning inside. I think we're turning back towards our family and our inner circle, or we're looking at our governments. And I think we were just not prepared. I think we were just, we were forced to quarantine and self-isolate for the greater good. And this imposed shutdown on people, on their lives, this forced pause button is creating a lot of turmoil. Would I have wanted it? No. Do I think this might be an actor of change, and can actually be an eye opener? And can I see this as actually like a positive turning point, maybe for cryptocurrencies? Is this the moment where we can shine? I'm not sure. Maybe I signed too negative, but I feel like this is just bigger than us right now. We have no idea of the ripple effect of what's happening right now and what's unfolding.
In California, where I am, it's just about the wokest part of the world you can be. I mean, everybody here is transgendered best friends. We're all, you know, running around holding hands. We eat quiche. Mm-hmm. We don't hurt animals. We love everybody. I mean, every right opinion you can have, we have here. We had the luxury of being so wealthy, so unbelievably free, you know, relatively speaking. That when the governor here which is, if people aren't familiar with the U.S. system, basically we have sort of mini presidents of each state. And when the governor here basically locked down the state of 40 million people, one of the surprising reactions was a lot of the people here didn't really know he was governor. That is interesting to me. So I can't really get into, you know, the particulars of the pandemic, how it spreads, what are the best courses of action. It's beyond my pay grade. I don't really know. I'm like everybody else. I get my information from public sources, and I know a little bit of, you know, about virality and all that stuff, but not enough to make any, you know, sensible decision. I can see both sides, if there are even two sides to the issue. But what I find super interesting is the social response to it and how governments are using it. And you don't need conspiracy theories. You don't need black helicopters. You don't need, you know, bad actors necessarily, but they're seizing the moment to flex in a way that if you told me 10 years ago, I would have laughed in your face. There's no way you can lock down an entire continent. There's no way you can shut down the world's engine. This is arguable, but in the U.S. economy, and just go, no, you're not allowed to do business anymore until we can look up. And then there was no way that there would be $1 trillion a day floated back into the, these are things I just could not imagine. So that goes right to the heart of the cryptocurrency experiment, I believe, in that I think this will be a turning point for what we find out about crypto. So I think we all, especially on the peer-to-peer electronic cash side, right? We all sort of had an idea as to how that's supposed to work itself out. And I don't think any of us have necessarily given up on it, but now is the, like, this is the time right now. I mean, this is what we were waiting for. And I'm curious, in your line of work, you actually, just before this all kind of went down, you sort of got a precursor as to how life may be like going forward for a little while. You're in Europe, you're in the Netherlands, and you actually got sick, right? Just a few days ago.
Yeah. No, that was quite scary. I was, you know, there were conferences happening in the Netherlands. We were out, and even though we were prepared to bunker down, we got sick. We weren't able to get tested, so I don't know if it was corona or not. What I do know is that after a few days of being quite sick and ill, I knew that I had to run an errand and get some medicine. And there's that scary moment where you know that you might be infectious, or you know that you might bring corona back home. And at the same time, the Netherlands were quite, I mean, there's a mixed bags of reaction, but basically they were quite slow to react or close sure. things, and they were quite reticent to implement strict, harsh measures regarding social distancing and for people, they didn't, in the beginning it was just like, everything just continue as it is, it's all good. But I was being more careful and left the house with a mask, goggles, and gloves. And then I looked at myself and I was like, okay, Ellie, you're being silly. You're being silly. Like, this is too far. You're taking it too far. So I removed the goggles. I'm like, okay, you know, this is enough.
We have to have a picture.
No, there's no pictures. but it's that level. It's like, what am I doing? What is happening? I'm going out of my home and suddenly I'm, you know, am I being paranoid? Am I helping others? Am I helping myself? Am I reassuring? Who am I? What am I doing? Really, all these questions come to your mind. You look at yourself and you have this mask on and it's scary and you're thinking, wow. And you step outside, you look like a crazy person and you're off to do your groceries. And I was scaring people off, like, because in the Netherlands, no one wears masks, right? This was like 10 right. days ago. No one, absolutely no one wears a mask. But at that point, schools had already started closing down. So I could see some kids, you know, with their parents and stuff. And that day at the grocery, already no more bread, no more, you know, milk, no eggs. I mean, all the basic necessities, kind of those elements were gone. Of course, restock the next day. But what I mean is that there was already some panic in the air. And then you have me there in the grocery, you know, doing my groceries with this mask and these gloves and just feeling like the angel of death. Because people look at you and they suddenly think, okay, either this is a crazy person, so I'm going to completely discard what I'm seeing. This is just not happening. Two, they think, shit, I realize if this person is walking around with a mask, it means that either they have corona, might have corona, were in self-quarantine or trying to protect themselves. They work either, maybe they're in the medical industry and they have to work with patients. You scare people because you make them think of everything that maybe is behind that mask.
Sure.
And three, they laugh, you know, because it's just so out of the norm. You look so crazy that people might laugh. And it's just like all of that at the same time. And you're just like sick trying to buy things. Yeah, it was really, really interesting. So, you know, from my place, I can see, you know, I can see a school and the playground's been closed and it's quite eerie. Really eerie. There's just a beautiful magnolia. Somehow the sun is very bright and the sky is very blue. So it's like there's like this eerie feeling where there's like less people, less noise. But at the same time, yeah, this sort of it. I must admit that by getting sick and with corona and everything, I have enjoyed. Okay, this sounds really weird, but this sort of this forced pause on life. I think for me, crypto, these last 2 years have been so intense, have been so nonstop. And this was like a forced pause moment for someone like me who's been organizing events, who's all about community building, who's used to going out, doing business face to face, peer to peer. This is a really like a forced self-reflecting moment. And I've decided to just become a full-time cat mom. So that's happening.
Well, we call it Crypto Hustle for a reason. I mean, you're out there just making things happen.
No. Hustling. That's where it's at. It's the funniest part. No, but I'm actually, it's making me realize, you know, what is our community? What is crypto? And I'm trying to find different ways for us to connect, because even though for me, it's been definitely more peer-to-peer, I think for the majority of the world, it's not. Like, I'm very lucky in Amsterdam to have a bunch of crypto peers and enthusiasts, and there's demand. But I want to do VR meetups. I want my next meetups, I want them to be in VR, because I think it's just different. And for those that are going stir crazy at home, to be able just to hang out with other crypto people is, I think, very important. It's almost the same audience, you know, gamers at home, tech-oriented. The odds of crypto people having a VR set are, I would guess, higher than in the general population. But yeah, it's like all this mix of trying not to go stir crazy and at the same time thinking of this world that is changing. Like, what are we going to have on the other side? Like, what happens when the lockdown are lifted? Like, Trump today was, you know, boasting about it all being done, you know, fine and done for Easter. I'm like, you know, and they just printed $6 trillion out of nowhere to recreate everything. I'm like, I mean, if this was, you know, the end of the monetary system as we know it, and if this is what we've been calling for, I mean, I think we have it. Now, are we ready to on board the masses, and are people actually ready to jump ship when it's sinking? That's another very difficult question, because governments right now are flexing their muscles all over this planet. You know, no one wants to be remembered as, oh, that one governor who didn't implement social distancing, right, so 10,000 people died in that region, and that it can be traced back to their policies on X date, that tweet. You know, politicians around the world are now going to try to reinforce their power. This is a moment for governments to reclaim some, you know, legitimacy and the eye of the public. Are they going to act, or are they going to just, you know, let it happen and see how it goes? And herd immunity mm-hmm. policies that were flying around. It's really this crazy balance sheet of risk, cost, opportunity between opening your borders, shutting them down, keeping your economy open, closing it. And and we're in the midst of it. So
yeah, so
yeah, sorry for the big sigh. I feel like I think everybody's sighing at home, like, and breathe.
Other than that, there's nothing going on.
Yeah. Nothing. Yeah. Boring.
So my thought as you were talking is, you know, whether there will be a re-embrace, I guess cynically, I guess there has to be a re-embrace of statism and people running to the open arms. And I sound like, this sounds really dickish and extremely condescending. And I don't mean it. I just right now cannot form another sentence. They're going to run to the arms of Big Daddy government. They're scared. They're, you know, the world's changing. So the one constant in their life has been the state. So they're going to run to politicians, and politicians have all the answers, and they have policies. Everybody loves policies, and they have bureaus, and they have committees, and they're giving press conferences, and that gives you an air of, you know, I'm in control, and, you know, and they have expensive suits, and they have all the right degrees. And so this is the natural, I think, tendency for most people is to sort of look to, and we're all looking for leaders for some unknown reason. And so I think there's going to be a remnant hopefully a significant remnant that kind of, you know, they don't have to become, you know, full-fledged black flag waving anarchists, but kind of rejects it, that sort of sees what's going on and looks for a new way, and they're going to start hedging. And I don't know if that means speculative crypto markets, but I do think it might be in areas of custody, of wallets, maybe hedging a little bit of your fiat, your filthy fiat into crypto and giving it a go, because more of us are parking online, as you said. For those who don't know, Eleanor is very much in the person-to-person, as she said, marketing aspect, sort of the meat space, conferences and so on. And for the foreseeable future, that ain't happening. So everybody's going to be parked online. It seems like the perfect opportunity, right, to go, hey, if you want to play this game, or hey, if you want to come over here to, you know, blockchain poker, the Bitcoin Cash site has seen a ginormous increase in users over the last few days.
Yeah, well, people are bored and ready to gamble. You know, sure. This is like crisis mode, so everybody's going to be, I think, doing like a balance sheet of, okay, what have I not tested, or what have I not researched, or there's this, I've always wanted to look into crypto, well, now's the time. Right. So I guess for some people, bunkering down means, you know, less distractions and maybe more time to go through the rabbit hole, and seeing what's in, you know, what's in crypto for them. Because indeed, a lot of people are,
yeah. like you were saying, to money, like what it is and its function, right?
I mean, right now, the U.S. and I think a bunch of other countries are looking at crypto and thinking, well, they have this solution, let's do the same thing. What's this airdrop helicopter concept? We could do, UBI is like, everybody is now flirting with these ideas that were like completely a no-go, like I would even say 6 to a year ago in the narrative. And now it's just everywhere and very okay. And I was like, okay, give me your IBAN and I'll give you some money. But I think we haven't seen the end of it. We really haven't seen the end of it. A lot of governments are going to try different things to reboot their economy. Some are going to be able to think, okay, well, now is the moment where this is when we decide to have a big change in our policies. This is when you can really implement whatever, because since the system is, you know, crackling, this is now where governments can sort of change directions. You were saying before, like, how lucky I was to have been, you know, abroad and lived in different places. And in these times, I must admit that my mind goes a lot to Delhi, and it goes to Beirut. You know, in Delhi, a month ago, we had this new law, basically, that would make every Muslim a non-citizen, or they would not be able to have a proper citizen registration, as they're trying to do a big census of the population. And in the midst of that, you know, there were riots and people have died in the streets, and now there's a lockdown. And I'm just looking at all these governments being able to implement really harsh, strict lockdowns without implementing martial law. And we're seeing, I don't know, we're seeing the rise of different governments being able to do whatever they want because people are afraid. And I think this is a very, like, this is a very general comment, right? But it's just, as you were saying, like running back to daddy's arms. At the same time, I don't think we can be patronizing. We were so lucky for us to be in crypto and to maybe already have a glimpse of what the alternative can be. And we try to share it with people around us. And I don't blame people right now that are just afraid for next month, for their next salary, or can they pay their rent? I think there's a lot of people here that are just going to be left out. And I am worried for the States. I have family there as well. And I'm thinking of the quality of the healthcare system. And I'm looking at, you know, the number of respiratory devices that people need in ICUs. Right. And I saw these guys were like using their 3D printing machine to print a bunch, and immediately got sued by whatever pharmaceutical company that was like, oh no. It's like, you know, it gives you faith back into humanity, and then the next second it's like crushed again. And I think this is what we shouldn't forget, is that in these times where we can indeed talk more about crypto and tell people maybe to, you know, get some cash, maybe don't leave all your money and all the bank accounts, and just, you know, see where you are in your finances and think of how stable they are and what would happen if that bank account got closed. Right. What if that bank tomorrow closed? Would you be okay? Would you have a solution? Would you have a plan B, C, D?
Yeah, places like Argentina were hopped in prime for this in Latin America. They had, you know, bans on cash runs, and I think all that's coming if I can put on my fortune teller hat.
Yeah.
But here we are. We're online now. Everybody's moved online. So it's not just something they do in passing and only for entertainment, but it's literally where they're living now for sure to keep up with events. And it's a great time to talk about borderlessness, to talk about permissionlessness, and to move into, you know, obviously it's extremely hard to have a conversation about crypto when people are getting their heads cracked open in Delhi or elsewhere, but I don't think it's irrelevant. So I think it can be part of the solution when you're looking for something to talk about that's not that. So, you know, to kind of move off of the subject and get on to things like cryptocurrencies and to suggest, hey, you know, there's a really interesting thing we can be doing. I think a lot of streaming services are going to employ crypto, or at least try to go more digital with their payment services. I can see a trend kind of moving, and as people in the United States that were hopelessly economically illiterate, so they're now learning that there's a Fed, and that when the top economic advisor for the U.S. president, for the Trump administration, comes out and says the total package will be $6 trillion, I think for the average person, like, they may be at first comforted, right? They're doing something. It's a policy. He's a guy in a suit.
Yeah.
He's on a podium. There's people.
Yeah, it looks like someone's doing something. Oh, they're acting. Something.
But then they, then they have to. The person who's watching this has to grapple with $6 trillion.
Yeah.
Like.
No one can.
Right.
No, I mean, really, no one can. Right. It just. I could say anything at this point, right? They could say 25, 6, 2.5. Right. I mean. These numbers are not, they don't make sense for the average, I think, person at all. And I think people are also realizing, like, where the first question, I think the first reaction is like, wow, that's a lot. And then second is like, where is it coming from?
Where is it coming from?
Who who's footing the bill for this? And us? No, wait.
Well, it's funny because I have sort of a long-standing friendly debate with my friends who are very progressive and you know, in other ways they'll call themselves democratic socialists and these sorts of things. But we have friendly debates about it. And they have said to me, and they've asked me, and I frankly don't have a good answer for it. They have said, look, if, and they lump me in, of course, with everybody who's not Buddhist. So we're all Hitler. They go, what? So if you have $6 trillion for this, why didn't you just print up $6 trillion the entire time? And that is again, it's the price of public education here in the United States because they don't understand economics.
I think,
but it's not a bad question. I think it's getting closer to the answer, which is why not?
Well, like, print exactly. Why trillion. Not? Right. Every day. Like, I mean, why are we stopping why now? Why is it only $1,200 per household? Like, make it rain $10,000, you know, please, like, I don't know.
Yeah. Let's do it. You know,
It's trying to still put some sense into a completely senseless reality. And $6 trillion is really a short-term wow policy that has no impact. I mean, or that has horrible impact in the long term.
I could not
it's just like
you
a,
said $6 trillion. And you're completely right. It's a short-term fix.
Yeah,
it is. $1 trillion. So
booyah. I mean, who won the lottery here? Oh, everyone. Oh, give me your addresses. Let me just, I'm sending it to you tomorrow. Cash, baby.
Right.
It's like, everybody feels like they won something. You know, I felt like I was being left out of Corona and I'm like, ooh, I'm getting government money. Like, oh yes, it's there's a problem because everybody's going to be like at the beginning, it's like, oh yes. And then what happens when, you know, inflation kicks in, you know? Yep. Oh, they're
everybody
trying.
Knows you got $1,200.
Everybody's holding their breath. Everybody's like, maybe prices won't go up. Maybe we can just this can happen. And if no one tells it, it won't inflate. But you my know that's not how it works.
Well, yeah, exactly. If my wife gets sick of my talk about money and crypto and stuff like that, and we, you know, she sort of absorbs through osmosis my silly ideas, and they were talking about some sort of rent subsidy. This is one of the ideas being floated. They were going to pay everybody's rent and they were going to. And so I was kind of sharing with her what some of the ideas were being floated around here in the United States. She just looked at me. She was going to do an errand or something, taking care of the kids or something. And she walks away and she goes, well, rents are going to go up.
I mean, and, you know, what about not paying taxes? What about that one? Why has no one thought of that one? Mm-mm. No. But we're going to give you a health package and a vet package and a house package, but a Corona relief package. But what about a tax relief, you know, moment?
People are starting to ask, like, what? So why are we paying taxes again if you can just print this shit? Like, what?
Yeah.
Why? Why are you doing? But anyway.
I think they shot themselves in the foot. I mean, I know they're trying to do something good. I think, you know, oh my God, can you imagine that meeting? Guys. Obviously, maybe there was a couple of women in the room. Okay, I'm being hopeful. But, you know, like this big board meeting, I'm imagining something with like, you know, really rich mahogany wood. You know, someone's smoking a couple of cigars somewhere and they're like, yes, $4 trillion. And then another guy is like, no, 5.5. And then 6. And then everybody's like, yes, 6, you know. Can you imagine that meeting? Like, you know, they're trying to say that all of this is being transparent and it's going to be fantastic because there's going to be, you know, a board, an oversight board and whoever checking this. I'm like, wow. I'm happy all you frat guys are just all having just a blast, wearing no masks and just like having just fun, you know, because
as they make the
announcement. Yeah, exactly. Just shake it out, you know. It's really crazy, crazy times.
That gets us back to hard money, right? And the concept of sort of the Bitcoin genius, which is the subject of digital scarcity and the inflation rate and the 21 million cap. And we've got this great hard money in Bitcoin Cash. Do you think people will see that? People will take more notice of it, possibly?
Maybe. If people start, you know, Googling this, if people start just trying to understand, then yes, if people start looking up, you know, what is money, like that's the first video. Second video is like, here's where you can buy Bitcoin. That's when you're on YouTube, like that's your next, the next search result.
And here
I think so. We still have the value proposition. This is when we can shine. This is when we can tell people about permissionless, censorship resistant money for the world. That's abstract from the Fed and the banks and the governments. It has its other layers of, you know, craziness. It has miners and developers and companies and crazy Telegram crypto communities and so and other things like that. But it's at least we're not printing money like crazy, you know. At least we're trying to stick to a monetary policy, a deflationary monetary policy. Halving is this month for BCH and for BTC, BSV coming up. You know, this is a work in progress for sure, but we're seeing two opposite monetary policies basically in action right now.
Couldn't be more distinct from each other. And when, so we can now start to have, I believe we're going to be able to have these conversations more with regular folk. I think we're going to be able to now have more of this conversation with normal folks, whereas before we might not have been able to. Words like the Fed and inflation, and now it's going to get real. And I think we're able to have that conversation. So if we introduce someone to Bitcoin in the past, real quick, you'd have to do BTC because it made the most sense. It was on most of the exchanges. It just, you know, but then they would quickly get disenchanted with that experience because they'd get, you know, this is our entire argument from the Bitcoin Cash standpoint. They'd get their BTC, they'd be very excited about it and then want to send it off and get charged a ginormous transaction fee. It would take forever. And they're like, why are you doing this now again? Like, what is the point of this? You wasted my entire time. At least now there are more people online. They have the time to go, okay, well, this BTC thing isn't working, but what about this one over here, this Bitcoin Cash one? Seems to be less expensive. Does that make any sense, or am I just maybe a little too hopeful?
I think you're a little bit too hopeful, but I like it. I don't want to rain on your parade. I think, of course, people, if they're now trying to send BTC and, you know, maybe if it's their first crypto payment, I think people just, they don't realize, right? They're just like, wow, I did my first crypto payment, whatever, whether it be whatever coin it is, I did my first, you know, online crypto transaction. It's when you become a real user that you start seeing the difference in UI, UX between wallets. And of course, that's when you start feeling the fees. You only start feeling the fees once you've done a couple of payments. And then you're like, wait, what? How much did I pay? How long did that take? You have to feel the pain, you know? And once you feel the pain, you'll switch. So I don't think it's like as a first pitch, it's kind of hard to be like, oh, hey, here's crypto and this one's cheap. You know, it's like, what are you talking about? But if you tell people, you know, this is crypto, this is how it works, and then you let people experiment, obviously, the one where you always want to offer people the best experience. So, of course, you want to tell them that it's cheap, that it's fast, that it's, you know, permissionless, that they have their private keys, you know, that they're set, that they can go and buy and transact freely. And then you just maybe hint at the differences. You say, okay, all of these cryptocurrencies are different. They have different values. They have different ideas regarding scalability, where they want to be, the features that they have on them. But you as a user, you can choose what they mean for you. Is it, you know, are you using this for payment? Are you using this, you know, and sort of a for investment and for like a lot, you're trying to diversify your investment or your portfolio. There's a whole bunch of different users out there. And there's so much they can do with crypto now. That was not possible. You can borrow, you can lend, you can stake. This is a whole other palette of financial tools that people are just even have to realize that they can, that they have, and that it's open actually, that no one is blocking them for trying, for starting, you know, out there. And just, I think there's this whole trial and error. I think there's always that first person that teaches you or tells you about, ooh, have you heard about crypto? And we sort of bring out some weird crypto powder and blow it in your face, and then you know you see the light, and then you go a bit mad for a couple of days, and then you come out the other side, and then you're like, decentralize everything. Okay, so there's that first phase, and then everybody makes sense, you know, with crypto in their life. I think everybody will have a different reason for using it. But indeed, in these times, it feels like crypto makes even more sense. It feels like crypto could be, you know, could benefit from this whole corona pandemic situation, which I don't like how correlated this is. And when I saw the first articles about, oh, cash is bad, use crypto, I was like, oh, God.
A little cringe.
And I was like, oh, God, it's kind of true, though. And now everybody's like, you know, there's this whole, everybody's going after cash and, you know, oh, it transmits corona. And indeed, it's dirty, right? Yeah, dirty, dirty cash, all of that. But it seems too good to be true for crypto, what's happening. And at the same time, you look at the devastation and you can't rejoice. You know, it's like this double sword. It's like, yay, but bittersweet, because look at what it's highlighting. Look at the inequalities. Look at the healthcare problem, the, you know, healthcare systems around the world. Look at the different reactions from governments across the world. Who's protecting their citizen? Who doesn't? Who's not trying? Who can't? Who doesn't have the resources? And at the same time, you're like, yay, crypto's being validated by all of this. It's this constant battle. It's this constant battle.
I've got a new marketing campaign for a new wallet. Family dying? Try Bitcoin Cash.
No. You see, we can't. But what we can talk about is, like, I think we have this new generation of, well, first of all, everybody's realizing how possible it is to work from home, or at least for, I would say, the new.
There you go. Yep.
Horrible elite I am part of. But, you know, I'm so lucky that I can say, oh, but I work from home. I've been remote working, basically, for a bunch of companies. And I feel lucky that, in the sense, like, my home and is also where I work. So I'm, like, kind of used to doing this. But I think for a lot of people and, you know, friends and Switzerland and everything are being like, oh, my God, I'm being sent home. And I can still do my job from home. And that's a big realization. Also very scary for micromanaging managers out there that are like, oh, my God, I'm just in my power. But people are now empowered and at home working, doing their laundry, cooking, and still being able to, you know, do their work. So I think being locked at home, if you're working, you're lucky. For others out there that have to go out and that are vulnerable, my heart goes out to them for having to be out there and doing this. And I'm thinking, of course, of all the healthcare professionals out there that are working and putting themselves on the ground. You know, in the Crypto Canal team, we also have a full license nurse, and I'm thinking of her a lot. And I just, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are just like, it's really impressive what they do, basically. Like, you know, I think, okay, I'm in crypto, I'm out there, you know, evangelizing the world, whatever. But yeah, in these times, I think people go back to what's important to them, to their core. You go back to family. You see a rise of divorces in China. I think we're also going to see a rise of, you know, there's also going to be a baby boom after all of this. There's always this sort of these boom and bust cycles. And I think in times of crisis, it's like, you know, it can get very dramatic and then it can become also very beautiful. So exciting times for sure.
Yeah, it is a for sure exciting time. And, you know, it's going to have to be, the financial system is going to have to be rebuilt. And maybe a part of that, crypto can finally take a little bit of a hold. And that all these questions people are asking that begin with something horrible, like the coronavirus and devastation and governments overreaching in large part. So maybe that translates into looking for alternatives. And one of the tools people can use to pay one another, to help one another.
And keep privacy. keep their privacy as well. In these times where, you know, civil liberties are being crushed right, left, and center, also to keep our heads up for new bills and laws that are trying to, you know, crush down end-to-end encryption. We need that's another great topic around. That's another thing we have to keep our eyes open for.
Governments privacy. Rarely waste a crisis. Rarely waste it. They try to take full advantage. So, all right, since we've solved all the world's problems yet again,
right?
As we say goodbye here, how can people follow you? Follow your work, what you're doing online, and so forth.
Crypto Canal. Check our Twitter. Check our Telegram. Check Cyber Capital, and of course Block Blank on Twitter.
We'll have links to all of it in the show notes. Thank you so much again for taking all of your time out.
Thank you, Kelso. No, thank you. Thank you for having me.
I needed
to
laugh. I needed to crack up. And it's gallows humor, right? We're laughing. We're dancing on the Titanic here, but...
No, we're not. We're not completely... We're on a boat, and it has holes in it, and we're doing our best. It's still afloat, part of it. The crypto boat is afloat.
The crypto buoy, the crypto dinghy is out there. I'm waiting for everybody to get in.
Grab a life jacket, jump to crypto. Oh, that was cheesy. That was cheesy. Cut.
I love it. All right. We'll take very good care. We're rooting for you, thinking of all of our friends in Europe and around the world.
Stay safe, California. Brace yourself.
We will indeed. Take good care.
You too. We'll be right back.